In one Philip Roth novel, he describes a rabbi who could pronounce the word God with three syllables. God. I think at some level, we all imagine the great spiritual leaders to be stentorian, immaculately groomed, always speaking in perfect paragraphs. I've had an experience recently that leads me to believe that's not the case. Not long after I got here, I mentioned this on Rosh Hashanah. At the advice of some people with whom I had studied, I solicited a spiritual director, someone with whom I would visit once a month for about an hour, first at my office and then at her home, eventually, to discuss, for lack of a better word, spiritual maladies, a kind of therapeutic approach that focused on the role that God plays in my life. Her name was Suzanne Hassel, and as I mentioned on Rosh Hashanah, she died about 3 months ago. And I was fortunate, you were too, that I spent about 70 hours alone with her. And it wasn't until she died, and this is probably true for a lot of deaths, isn't it, that I realized how important she was. Not only was she important in my life, she was probably the most holy person I'd ever met. And she didn't look it. She was just a pretty middle-aged woman who was ordained as a Presbyterian minister, spoke in quiet tones and let me sit on her porch swaying in the rain, watch the horses out on Nubbin Ridge. She was, I think, the most authentic person I've ever known. And like all the words I'm talking about these holidays, authentic is a slippery word. We don't have a great grasp on how to define that word. But when I think about her and the influence she had on me, ironic or paradoxical though it may be that she was a Presbyterian and one of my great spiritual advisors was not Jewish, I think about the way people experienced Siddhartha or Akiva or the Baal Shem Tov or Jesus or Menachem Mendel Schneerson, that there was someone in their midst whose sanctity was so hard to explain that defied words. And so they created these great armatures of stories about them that sound silly and fantastical, but because they couldn't capture in simple language what it was to know a pathway to God, they had to make this person seem fanciful. When in truth, I would imagine the Baal Shem Tov was just a wonderful, kind, happy person, like if you've ever heard the Dalai Lama speak. Authenticity seems to me to be the golden road to knowing God. And again, I can't quite define it for you, nor can I explain why I think that to be true. But more and more I know that to be true. And so let's struggle with that a little. We live, as I've said before, in confusing times. We live in the era, vomitously enough, called the fake news era. There was yellow journalism once, so it's probably not so new. We live in an era of deceit and confusion and narcissism, superficiality. And maybe we need to challenge that with authenticity. Maybe authenticity could be the balm for our age. George Orwell said that in a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So let's tonight, with the beginning of Yom Kippur, start a quiet revolution. Our sages say that the seal of the Holy Blessed One, the seal and surety of God, is truth. That's the first piece, I think, that authenticity entails is some sort of acquisition and apprehension and intention towards truth. That we should understand the real nature of things. I'd sit with Suzanne. She wouldn't do much. Like any good counselor, she mostly listened. But her faith was real and true. It was simple and earned. It wasn't the faith that I saw on a bumper sticker recently or emblazoned on the back window of a truck. It was something that doesn't have a lot of words. So if she was the most authentic person I've ever met, and short of showing you a picture of her, I can't really describe her to you. Let me begin by thinking about a few things that authenticity is not. And these are all things we struggle with. I'm not pointing fingers. I am not yet authentic, nor will I be by the time I die. No one here is truly integrated. That's the work of a lifetime. But what we can avoid, I think, is lying and hiding. Those are the two cornerstones that authenticity is not. If you are lying to yourself, to your loved ones, to God, you're fooling yourself. Because as we just read in the Amidah, God yodea raze olam, God knows the secrets of the world. And if you are hiding, you're probably not hiding very well. I can tell you that from experience. Various midrashim say that there are several types of thieves, and the first they list is one who would steal the mind of another fellow, deceive people, commit fraud. And I don't think they're strictly talking about kiting checks, lying, falsifying contracts. I think they're talking about the everyday frauds we go through, the everyday dissemblies we use. The dissembling, the everyday falsification of our presentation, that we are more or less than we might seem. There's this beautiful haftarah in Isaiah, I think it's the haftarah for Vayikra, and it's this comical scene that we don't think about much, but all those idols that the ancient people had, all those fetishes and dolls and trees that they would carve, someone had to do that work. Someone had to step out and massage the clay or carve the wood or scrimshaw the stone. And you wonder, as Isaiah did they think to themselves, this is a joke. I'm making this thing. It's really just a trinket. Isaiah says that the idol maker never says, this thing in my right hand must be a fraud. But the implication is he or she knows it. That's the kind of lying. It doesn't even have to be outward. Although there's a very funny story that our Midrash tells. We're referred to Esav. Jacob's brother Esav is referred to as the greater son, which intends in the Hebrew to mean he was older. He was the elder. But our sages thought, you know, we never think of Esav as spiritually height, on the spiritual height that Jacob is. So they tell this funny little silly story. This can be compared to a country that was levying a bodyguard for the king. A certain woman came and said, I have a son. He's a little person, what we formerly used to call dwarves. He's a little person, and his name is Tall Swift. And she said, my son is tall and swift. That's why we call him Tall Swift. And the levy, the musterer of the levy, turns to her and says, it's possible that in your eyes he is tall and swift, but in ours he's clearly small and of limited use. At least as a bodyguard. We can call ourselves by any name we want. We can present ourselves in any way we want, but if the upshot is that we're just lying, we're nowhere nearer to authenticity than we were the day before. You can't lie, and you can't hide. We all think we're doing it really well, don't you? You think your colleagues don't see the real you. You think your children perceive you as this divine creature who rules from on high. You think your siblings don't even know the truth. You think you're jealous of everyone else, but they must be jealous of you. You're not so different on the outside as you are on the inside, and the effort you're spending to hide is the waste. That's what creates the problems. In the Talmud, it says that any scholar, and frankly, any person whose inside doesn't match one's outside is no scholar. And any person whose inside doesn't match the outside is an abomination. They knew. They saw that the goal was to have consistency and coherence and consonance between the way you understood yourself and the way you showed to other people. That hiding was a fool's errand. That you could try to pretend to be anyone you wanted to be, but ultimately you were left with who you are. And that all that time you spent running and drawing facades was wasted air, as Ecclesiastes would say, was vanity. There are a couple of betrayers of King David in the Bible, in the book of Samuel, Doeg and Achitophel. And Doeg betrays David through the priests, and Shaul murders priests who had assisted David, and Achitophel falsely sides with David's brother. But they presented themselves, we're told, as upstanding, noble young men. So the Midrash describes them like a house full of straw. I guess it's hard to imagine the construction. They used burned wood bricks, I would imagine, but they might have layered the mortar with straw. Or one might imagine layers of sort of insulation of straw. The problem is, says Midrash, there were holes in the house. And the straw would be stuffed in. I think it's like blow-in insulation, you could imagine. And after a time, the straw would poke its way out. Everyone could see that the straw was not a brick house, but a house made of straw and easy to blow down. I guess the upshot is best described in Yiddish. If I try to be someone else, who will be like me? That's who you are. That's what you're stuck with. And lying and hiding aren't going to get you anywhere. Suzanne never did. She was very upfront. I think that's real faith. Those people with their faith emblazoned on the back of their truck. Those people who greet you, just took my shoe to a repair person, and his store is littered, his leather shop is littered with biblical verses, and we all know that. Okay, we all go there. He does fix your bag pretty well, though. I also want to point out, and this is actually not immaterial, he charges taxes but only accepts money in cash, which also feels fishy. Which is sort of a broad way of saying that we all know people of faith who are real jerks. And we all know atheists who are delightful people. And that wearing your attributes on your sleeve isn't fooling anyone. It's just another kind of hiding. The struggle, I think, if we look at what authenticity might really be, how we might understand it and how we might enact it in our lives, it's a kind of integrity. As I said, it's the matching of all the parts such that who you are on the inside, who you are at home, who you are in the workplace, who you are when you're running a race, at the gym, in your car, is the person you always are. Deuteronomy says, Baruch atah va'ir uvaruch atah v'sadeh. That's one of the blessings that it offers us in Deuteronomy, that you should be blessed in the city and blessed in the field. Which is lovely. I mean, in an agricultural time, that sounds great. That sounds like just what we'd want. But our sages who lived in a sort of more urban environment thought about it. And they said, what they're probably getting at is that your home should be, at least metaphorically, near the synagogue. That the way you behave tonight, sitting, being watched, is the way you behave all the time. That if no one could see you, you'd still behave with the same decency. To use another Yiddish expression, don't be a tzaddik in a fur coat. Do you know that one? So our Our ancestors in Poland lived in cold times. They didn't know that they could move to Tennessee. And they knew that there were ways to stay warm. You could light a fire, you could get some furs and skins, you could build a house. Wearing a fur would keep you warm, but lighting a fire would keep your whole community warm. Don't pretend to be righteous and just wear a fur coat. Share your righteousness, share your gifts, share your benevolence. That's true righteousness. It's hard to be consonant inside and out. As I'll start to describe a little tomorrow, I'm not. I'm faking it all the time. Let me think we all are. We're all imposters. That's okay. We've talked about that before. The hard part, I think, is to wear it lightly. Another word we use a lot, not so much in the worldly descriptions, that's hard to nail down is Hamish. I'll let you know, as a rabbinical candidate, Heskimuna Synagogue did not use the word Hamish to describe itself. Every other synagogue does. And it was such a relief to find a questionnaire that didn't use the word Hamish. So Hamish means Yiddishly down to earth, without pretension, somewhere. That's the trick. If you can work at being without pretension, and I'll go to the dictionary definition of authenticity. It's true to your own personality, spirit, or character, sincere with no pretensions. That's Hamish. That's what we mean when we say Hamish. True to oneself, down to earth, just like you good folks, salt of the earth. Hamish. It's not easy. It's not easy to let go of all the aspiration and the need and stop hiding and turn off the lies that we tell ourselves and the lies we think we're telling our neighbors and the lies and the hiding we think we present even unto God. But eventually we'll be found out and it'll be easy. One of the Polish masters, the Hasidic masters in the 18th century, Elimelech of Lezhinsk, imagined what would happen at the end of his life. And he says, "When I die and stand in the court of justice, they'll ask me if I had been as just as I should have. I'll answer no. Then they'll ask me if I've been as charitable as I ought have. Again, I'll answer no. Did I study as much as I should have? No. Did I pray as fiercely as I should have? And this time I'll give the same answer, no. And then the Supreme Judge will smile and open arms, saying, Elimelech, you spoke the truth. For this alone you should have a share in the world to come. It's okay. That's the hardest lesson that Suzanne taught me. That was what her authenticity brought me and the way it saved me. I watched her be her simple self all the time, every time. Through her leukemia, after her divorce, through my difficulties, I watched her be nothing more than present and attentive. She wasn't fancy. She didn't put on extra makeup when I came. She didn't sit in a high chair. And by doing those things and still, I guess unsurprisingly now, transforming my life, leading me through the valley of death's shadow by moments, making sure that I could still be your rabbi 8 years later, through all the vicissitudes of life and career and family, supporting me and loving me into a better place, I realized I didn't need to do anything more. That was enough. That being honest and simple and vulnerable and without pretension is all it takes to be a rabbi, to be a husband, to be a brother, to be a mother, to be a priest, a doctor, a dentist. Just bring your best self. Bring your true self. Bring your honest self. Come out in the open with all that you are.